Well, this morning, I'm very thankful to be your speaker. We're glad to see everyone that's here with us. We're going to be looking at something that's very familiar to most of us. That is the story of Jesus' false trials, where he comes to meet Pilate. And we just want to look at a few things concerning that story this morning. In John chapter 18 and 19, when we think of Jesus being on trial before Pilate, if you consider the verses and all who were involved, it's really Pilate who is on trial. And we want to notice some of the things he said and why he said them this morning. And we're also going to find out how significant, how important Pilate was to the fulfillment of prophecy, the crucifixion of Jesus, and the fact that he had to make some tough choices himself as a ruler concerning Jesus, and how those choices he made helped fulfill prophecy. In 2013, Time magazine featured a study that proposed to name the 100 most significant people in history. The study's authors filtered through over 9,000 names and came up with this list. And these are the top 10 of that list. Number one, Jesus Christ. Now, it's kind of intriguing that Time magazine would recognize that Jesus was the most significant person in history. I think we can see that, but when a secular magazine says that, it's a little odd that it finds that he is the significant person in history. Number two was Napoleon. Number three was Muhammad. Four was Shakespeare. Five, Abraham Lincoln. Six, George Washington. Seven, Adolf Hitler. Obviously, wasn't based on popularity. Number eight, Aristotle. Nine, Alexander the Great. And 10, Thomas Jefferson. Now, that study examined over about 9,000 names, but there was one significant person they didn't name, and maybe as Christians we don't even consider him that significant, and yet he actually was. In fact, this one individual was more vital to the history of the world than Shakespeare, Lincoln, or Washington all put together, and that was Pontius Pilate. Now, why would we say, or I say, that he's the most significant man that ever lived besides Jesus? Well, you're going to have to wait as we go through a few verses to find out. First of all, we want to learn a little bit about Pilate himself. According to many sources, Pilate was a cold, cruel, calculating politician, and he was experienced. He came from a military background. He was kind of a lower class of Roman citizen, but because he married into some royalty there, his wife spoke up for him, and of course Tiberius Caesar promoted him to be a ruler there from 26 to 36 AD in Jerusalem. Now, he was more comfortable staying over in the area of Rome, but part of that job was to go to Jerusalem, especially during the Passover, and to deal with the Jews at that very special time, because there would be issues that would come up with that many people. There would be differences of opinion. There would be different tribes there, just like we're seeing today in modern-day Israel and Palestine. A conflict continues, and there were conflicts in that day. Pilate wasn't too keen on having to deal with this, but it was part of his job. And being of a military background, he was used to dealing with people, but he was more of a brutal type of person. He could be very cruel. And he instigated a few things that the Jews did not appreciate. He made some shields that his guards carried through Jerusalem at one time that had Tiberius as a god printed on the shields, and that raised a big riot and, of course, reported to Rome, and Rome told him to tone that down. But there was some lives lost during that time as he went after those who had reported him and there was some bloodshed. And of course, we know in Luke 13 it talks about him mingling the blood of some that had been offering sacrifices. He had gone in and caused some bloodshed there. And so the Bible records that. He had taken from the temple to build an aqueduct. He had taken money from the temple, the funds, and of course that caused an uprising. So he wasn't a friend to the Jews. He was a Roman. He was working for Caesar. He had a large number of enemies. And Jerusalem wasn't an easy place to rule. The Jews hated the Romans. They were overtaxed. They were not free. And the whole purpose of the Passover was to spiritually identify that God had freed them from slavery, from the Egyptians. And here they are under Roman rule. They're not free. So you could see celebrating the Passover spiritually, it just didn't really make a lot of sense to some that they had to be under Roman rule. So there was a lot of hate. And riots would break out. And so that's why Pilate makes sure, as we read here in a little bit, that whenever there was a feast day in Jerusalem and thousands of Jews would be gathered in that one city, he always made sure he had plenty of soldiers on hand, because with that many Jews in place, and as an experienced politician and soldier, he knew that things would break out. But when he wasn't in Jerusalem, his home was in Caesarea Maritima, and that had been built by Herod the Great as a seaport on the Mediterranean. He'd rather spend time there. It was a summer palace, and that was the living quarters of governors in that region. So he usually stayed there. Now, before Pilate meets Jesus, he was already having political problems. He was under pressure from Rome and from Caesar. Because of the things he had done with the Jews, he was not popular, and he was creating uprising when he was supposed to keep the peace as a ruler. And we mentioned a couple of those revolts. And these riots put Pilate in jeopardy politically with Caesar. Remember, he is a politician as we read this story. And we're going to talk a little bit about politicians today. He was ordered back to Rome to stand trial for cruelty and oppression, particularly on a charge that he had men executed without a proper trial. So he's going to be very careful now about having a proper trial concerning Jesus. And so that's the short story of the man who had Jesus crucified. We're going to read a little bit beginning in verse 28 of John 18 and make some comments here as we read down to verse 40. On page 1246, John 18, verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning, it's about 6 o'clock. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." They didn't really answer the question. Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." That the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking of yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate is concerned about some things he had heard, so he wants to ask Jesus himself about this accusation about being a king, because politically this is going to be a problem. Here's what he's going to have to deal with. But Jesus doesn't give him an answer that he's expecting. My kingdom is not of this world. Did Pilate understand that? Was he thinking on spiritual terms, or maybe his kingdom was somewhere else that's not of the Roman world? It's not of the threat to the empire? Jesus is telling him, I'm not a threat to you. But Pilate could have said, you know, that's not quite true what you're saying. Because Malchus lost an ear due to Peter taking out a sword and cutting it off. Why doesn't the Bible record that Pilate thought that or said that? Maybe because that would have been a bigger problem to bring Malchus there as a witness and Malchus to say, yeah, he healed me. I don't know why he didn't say that or bring Malchus up. Maybe he was thinking it. Maybe not. Verse 37, Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? I don't understand this. Your kingdom, are you a king? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Now Jesus has preloaded the argument that Pilate's going to have to deal with in his mind. He's putting Pilate on trial now, because this is going to be about truth. As a ruler, as a judge, as an executioner, with the experience he has, he should understand, with all the pressure of Rome and Caesar on him, he needs to find out the facts, because he has just been asked an eternal question. Truth. What is truth? You know, today in our climate, a lot of people in postmodernist thinking and philosophy, most people say it's kind of your idea of truth. What's true to you? What you perceive is true? What you want to be true? Because anything really goes. Just live your own way and try not to bother anybody else. Aristotle said of truth, quote, to say of what it is that it is, unquote. Ralph Waldo Emerson said every violation of truth injures not just the liar, but is a stab at the health of human society. You know, there's falsehoods and there's outright lies. We've heard of black, white, gray area lies. A falsehood, though, is someone who says something they believe to be true, but it turns out to be a lie. There is a distinction. Some people can get the wrong information, like a lot of our religious friends. You can believe a falsehood. It's still a falsehood. But you need to read God's word. You need to hear God to find out the truth. Now, a lie is someone intentionally presenting something false as the truth. Now, in today's environment, there's this thing called post-truth. It's a distinguishing characteristic. The Oxford Dictionary named it Word of the Year in 2016. An adjective relating to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotional and personal belief. That's where we're at now. Instead of the facts, whether we want to hear them or not, it's kind of dealing with, what do you want to hear? What do you want me to say? So post-truth is not mere lying, it's a form of political manipulation, a form of trying to get somebody not to care about what's true because you're putting ideology in front of reality. That's from Lee McIntyre, research fellow at the Center for Philosophy and History of Science, Boston University. One other, Dan Ariely, professor of psychology and behavioral economics, Duke University, he said, quote, cheating is contagious. Being dishonest changes our brains, making it likely that small acts of dishonesty can escalate into larger transgressions. You know, one thing about Pilate, and I take this verse out of some of the verses we're going to encounter, Pilate makes this statement, and it's a strange statement, we'll get to it, when he says, behold the man, after he tortures Jesus. and has him whipped to satisfy those who had brought him. Behold the man. What is that? What does he mean by that? Well, he's on trial. Ironically, he's kind of speaking about himself. Behold what the man has accepted, what he is doing to God in the flesh. Well, I continue in 37, verse 38. Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all." It doesn't say whether he stayed and lingered or if it was just ironic, because we know that politicians then and now, it's not about truth. It's about power. It's about control. Because truth will not keep you in office. I learned that early on when I was a union steward, a committeeman. I told people up front, because I knew this was an issue, "I'd like your vote, but I won't lie for you. If you're going to lie, you're on your own. I'll represent you for labor law, but I won't lie." A lot of people said, "Thank you. I'm not voting for you because you won't lie for me. I want someone that will lie for me." I wasn't shocked because I knew I expected that. But I had to let them know where I was at. I wasn't reelected. But I did my job, and I have no regrets. And the one thing that I learned from that is, if you don't lie to management, they're experienced. They're labor lawyers. All of them have a bar degree. They recognize honesty, and I won a lot of things from grievance monetary settlements that other committee people didn't. And one of them told me, "Because you don't lie, I'm willing to help you out, to tell you things that I wouldn't trust other people." So honesty can pay. But with Pilate, when he asks, "What is truth?" he's kind of saying, "What is that? How is that going to help me in my situation? Who are you? You're some kind of king, but you don't have a kingdom that's of this world. You're not a real threat to me. If I go with the truth, what's that going to do for me and the pressure I'm under with Caesar and Rome? I want to look good with Tiberius. I want to look good with the Caesar. Who are you?" So we don't know what he's thinking about truth, but he does ask that question, which is ironic, because we'll find out it's really about with control and power with Pilate. It seems he's kind of fair according to the Bible, but if you read sources outside the Bible, Pilate is shown as a cruel, brutal man. The Bible takes a little easy on him. It seems like it's dealing with, hey, he seems like a fair guy. So when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews, said to them, "I find no fault in him." With his interview and this interaction that we don't necessarily get because we're not there, just a few words, he didn't find any fault. He didn't find any truth to the accusations, any threat. Verse 39, "But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. You therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" Now, he's finding a way out of this because he does not want to deal with Jesus. He does not want to punish him and to get in trouble of having a trial, executing someone he shouldn't, because 7 times he tries to get rid of Jesus. Sends him to Annas and he's sent back. He's not happy about this. So he finds an out. "You have a custom, you Jews. Should I release someone to you during the Passover? How about Jesus? How about this King of the Jews? How about releasing him?" Verse 40, "Then they all cried out, saying, 'Not this man, but Barabbas.'" Now, Barabbas was a robber. That's what it says here, but he was an insurrectionist. He was a terrible man. He was a murderer. He was one of the toughest guys there that they were holding. Verse 19, what happens when Pilate hears this? Well, he's got to please these people so there's not a riot. Pilate took Jesus, verse 19 and 1, scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns, put it on his head. They put on him a purple robe. Then they said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they struck him with their hands. Now, just a few words there, but we know the story from other texts. When they scourged him, there was a terrible beating with the Roman leather ropes. They injured Jesus very deeply. It's hard to read. This was God in the flesh. This is about politics. This is about human reasoning. Everyone that meets Jesus is on trial. Jesus is not on trial. He knows what he's going to do. Everything he does, when he says and when he doesn't speak, is fulfilling prophecy. They mock him, verse 3, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. He was the King of the Jews. And in ignorance, or just not caring, hardened soldiers, they didn't know who they're dealing with. Verse 4, Pilate then went out again and said to them, "Behold, I'm bringing him out to you, and you may know that I find no fault in him. Are you happy now? I've tortured him. I'm a brutal man. I've showed you what I can do. Is this enough bloodshed for you?" Verse 5, then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." What did he mean there? It's an odd saying, really. He's talking about the king, and all of a sudden, it's "Behold the man." What is there about that? Well, they didn't believe Jesus was their king. They didn't believe he was the Son of God. And Pilate's trying to get out of this. This is someone who is their king, but they're not accepting him. When he makes this statement, Pilate's really quoting from Zechariah 6 and 12. Zechariah 6 and 12 says, "Behold the man whose name is the branch, for he shall branch out from his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord." That's a messianic prophecy. Pilate is saying something that God had already said. He knew Pilate would say. Pilate has a choice in this, but Pilate says it. This is the man, the second Adam. The sixth day, Friday. Man was created on the sixth day. Jesus is crucified, the second Adam, on the sixth day. This man, in the flesh, claims to be God, but you don't accept him. What is truth? I'm here for power. So he's doing what they ask. Verse 6, therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." Now, Pilate is a politician. He knows they can't crucify him. Roman law limits them. They would have stoned him, but they want him crucified. They couldn't do either. Pilate says he's not worthy of it. He's innocent. He's guiltless. You do it. Take him off my hands. Verse 7, the Jews answered him, "We have a law." Now he's dealing with a high priest who also is cunning, who's also religious and a politician. "According to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." Blasphemy under the Old Testament. But Jesus was the Son of God. They're having to deal with the truth. Jesus is the truth, the way, the truth, and the life. Verse 8, therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid. Now something has changed in Pilate. This soldier of Rome, who's ruler, who has political ambitions, trying to please Caesar, is now afraid of what he heard. The Son of God. Have I just beaten the Son of God? Or does he believe that at all? What made him afraid? Verse 9, and went again to the praetorium and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" Is he asking him to divulge that he came from heaven? Or is he asking him, you're some from some providence, you're a king over there and I shouldn't care about it? Tell me something. I'm trying to help you out here. But Jesus gave him no answer because he knew he was a lamb to the slaughter, and the prophecy in Isaiah said that he would be silent as a lamb that was going to be slaughtered. Verse 10, Pilate said to him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power? That's what Pilate is about. Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? I have Roman rule. I have the authority of Rome. Who are you? What kind of king are you? Jesus answered. Now he's dealing with God. You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. That was the high priest Caiaphas who delivered him, trying to get this man off their hands. He knew better. He knew the prophecies. He was denying Jesus as the Messiah, as a Jewish man. Pilate was a Gentile. He probably didn't know all of this, but he's being introduced, and he's quick. He's smart. He didn't get where he's at without being intellectual about things. Verse 12, from then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. They had another card up their sleeve, an ace. We know about your situation. We know about the politics of Rome. If you let him go, you're not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. That's how far down they've gone now. When Pilate, verse 13, therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now, it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, behold your king. Pilate made a decision, but he did not give up having the last word. You've put me into this position. I tried to release him. He's innocent. I don't want to do this. My wife came to me the same day with a dream about an innocent man, Jesus. Have nothing to do with him. Why was that dream important? The Romans believed in mythological gods. Was he a son of one of those gods, somebody important I need to know about? And that's how they communicated, through dreams. So there's a little bit of superstition since he didn't know the scriptures. Who is this guy? Where did he come from? Should I know a little bit more about you? Well, since he's pressured now that they're going to report him to Caesar, behold your king. This is what you want. But I have the last word. He's your king, and you're really going to kill him because I tried not to. Verse 15, but they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? Who's on trial? Not Jesus, everybody else. Everybody has to make a decision here. The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. Was that truth? They knew they had a king. They rejected this one. They're saying, we'll take Caesar. Verse 16, then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus and led him away. So now he delivers them to the Jews to do what they're going to do, allowing the crucifixion. Verse 17, he bearing his cross went out to a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him and two others with him, one on either side and Jesus in the center. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Pilate finally told the truth, maybe the first time in his life, concerning God. He recognized who Jesus was. I don't know if he knew it, but he was afraid. He tried to get rid of him, but now he's telling the Jews, "This is your king. I'm making known who it is that we're killing. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. Therefore the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write, 'The King of the Jews.'" But he said, "I am the King of the Jews." Let's change that a little bit, because we don't recognize him. He's saying that. He's not that. He's just saying that. He's a blasphemer. Verse 22, Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Pilate had the last word. The problem was, faced with that difficult decision, and as you read these other texts yourselves with this, I think you can see that Pilate was on trial with God. Pilate seemed to know that Jesus was an innocent man, a man without faults. He was trained to recognize this. That's why he was a ruler. As a soldier, he knew when people would lie to get out of a death sentence. But he punished Jesus with great torture, and Jesus did not bend. He was silent. Pilate had never seen anything like this in his life. He was innocent. But Pilate had his own God. That was Caesar. Later in Acts 3, 13 and 15, Peter makes the same point to a different crowd. He says, "The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus when you delivered over and denied in the presence of Pilate when he had decided to release him. You killed the author of life, whom God raised from the dead." So, Jesus fulfilled all the prophecy concerning him, the plan of God. He did it perfectly. But we can't let it be lightly thought that what he went through was anything easy. This was God in the flesh, fulfilling prophecy so that he can be proven to be the Christ. He showed the miracles. We mentioned Malchus. That's why he wasn't brought up, because that was proof, among many proofs. The fact that he chose to die for our sins, yours and mine. The fact is, this morning, as we behold a man, when we think about Jesus and the Lord's Supper, when we think about God coming in the flesh, we're the ones on trial. The whole world is on trial. And at the judgment day, God will decide who heard the truth, who believed it, who lived according to it. Well, this morning we give the lesson to you. We ask what your state is with God. If you're not saved, if you're not a Christian, the Bible tells us to hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. Faith comes by hearing. The evidence is by the words that God has given us based on the life of Christ. And by obeying that, those spiritual instructions, we have a way into heaven if we're faithful here on the earth until we pass or Christ comes. If you're a Christian, and if you have failed in your trial, if you have some sin or something that you request prayer for, we'd like to assist you now at this time. Won't you come while we stand and sing?